Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's go, boy.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. An hour from now, Don Beebe is going to join us. He played in five Super Bowls, four with the Buffalo Bills, one with the Green Bay Packers, winning in 1996 behind Brett Favre, Mike Holmgren, and the Pack. Beebe will join us 1 hour from now. Later on in this hour, we are stunned to a news in approximately 20 minutes from now. And in 40 minutes from now, are the Dolphins sniffing around dealing a bunch of draft picks for Joe Burrow? That's all coming up straight ahead right here on the DA. But let us begin with Zion Williamson's return last night to the hardwood. He had not played since the preseason. And Zion, in just 18 minutes of work last night, 22 points, 4 3-pointers, an explosion in the fourth quarter, and the Pelicans fall short against the Spurs, but give everybody in New Orleans hope that what Zion is billed to be is absolutely worthy of the hype. I have felt this way since he was at Duke, felt this way since midway through last season, that the common narrative on Zion was unfair. Many people saw his dunking ability as the only highlight they might see from college basketball, and because they're so otherworldly, assume that he's just a dunker, that he's basically Harold Miner, a one-dimensional basketball player who wasn't actually good at basketball, just at dunking. And I always thought that was so unfair. Yes, in high school, his legend was built by his dunking. But at Duke, what you saw was he was a basketball player. He had floor spacing down. He had passing down. He had outside shooting down. He was coachable. He was a team-first guy. He wasn't just grip it and rip it. He was a basketball player at the highest level. And last year when Zion played for Duke, they were a championship team. When he didn't, they were not. And last night we saw that. Zion didn't light the arena on fire last night because of his unbelievable dunks. It was his three-pointers. It was his cross-court passing. It was his rebounding. That's what I love about Zion, is that Zion is not just a dunk machine. He does everything. And if he can remain healthy with that type of torque and power on that body, he is going to be not a star, a super-duper megastar. I don't ever want to say he's the next LeBron, because that's totally unfair to anybody. It was like calling LeBron the next Michael Jordan. There's only one Michael. There's only one LeBron. Hell, if Zion wins one NBA Finals or goes to a pair of NBA Finals but doesn't win one, he will have had a pretty good career. He could be a Hall of Famer like Dominique Wilkins and not even get to an NBA Finals. So I'm not going to call him LeBron. But last night we saw what makes Zion special. He doesn't need to dunk to affect a game. He's a basketball player. Yesterday, Matt LaFleur took the podium. and spoke about the end of the Packers season. And you might assume that Matt LaFleur, first-year head coach, leads his team to a 13-3 regular season. They win a playoff game. They end up in the NFC Championship game. You know what? There was a lot to like about the season. And while Packer fans probably are straining and sweating and kvetching and complaining and worrying about the way that it ended and another chance at Aaron Rodgers in a Super Bowl lost, you might think that he would just kind of calm the waters and tell the natives, you know what, great season, a lot to be positive for, we're going ahead, we like where we're at. Exactly what Rodgers did. I mean, Rodgers, after the loss, said, window is open, I'm happy with the direction of the team, all positive spin. And LaFleur went the other way. Matt LaFleur was openly critical and sounding some alarms at what happened Sunday in Santa Clara.
That's something that I'm still trying to figure out right now as we speak. I mean, I don't understand that, because you're there. You have an opportunity to go to play in a Super Bowl, and for that to happen, it's bothersome. And we got to look at ourselves, everybody. I got to look inside of myself and see why weren't our players playing with their hair on fire. I think everybody in our organization has to do that.
So I largely like Matt LaFleur. I think LaFleur walked into a dicey situation where there might have been distrust around the coach after Mike McCarthy, maybe distrust with the organization, where the front office was, making sure Aaron Rodgers buys in. You have to have Rodgers get a buy-in, because if you don't get that, you lose the locker room. But you also can't placate Aaron Rodgers. That's a delicate situation. The team would know. Rodgers, obviously, not what Rodgers was 5-10 years ago. So I thought that was a slippery situation LaFleur walked into and did a really good job. Look, they went 13-3, and people calling them the worst 13-3 team ever. So stupid. They won too many close games. So what? You win a lot of close games if you go 13-3. Nobody ever blows out everybody for 13 out of 16 games. The worry to me was not whether the Packers were good. The worry was, can the Packers match the intensity of the Niners? And they didn't in Week 12, and they didn't in the NFC Championship game. And I thought that they would. I thought that after what happened in Week 12, they would, and which is why I thought it was going to be a one-score game for most of it. And the Packers simply got punched in the mouth early and wilted. They were not ready for that fight. Rodgers wasn't ready. The defensive front line wasn't ready. The offensive line wasn't ready. Nobody was ready. And the amount of space created by the Niners offensive line before Raheem Mostert even hit a linebacker or a member of the Packers defense was really embarrassing. It was shameful how they just got mauled off the line of scrimmage. So let's ask this about Matt LaFleur. Is Matt LaFleur's concern with Sunday, Mraz, that he didn't coach well enough? Or is his concern, what he is saying there, is, crap, my team's soft?
I think, ironically, it's a little bit of both. I bet you he really does look at his team and probably believes he did what he could to prepare them for that game.
I think you're right. I felt yesterday listening to Matt LaFleur that he had to say, I take responsibility.
Right.
But what he was really saying is, I did my part and those guys didn't execute.
Right. And I think in his mind, he probably views himself as the young coach who's supposed to be, you know, hanging with the players, the young. And he wants that to be a moment where he enters training camp next week and next year. And all of a sudden, he's the tough guy where he could point to, that wasn't good enough, that effort wasn't good enough. But I bet you there is that moment where Matt LaFleur says that yesterday and in the days that have followed the NFC Championship game, where he, in a private moment, is second-guessing himself while still trying to portray maybe a younger arrogance to the public perspective.
I think there's only a small part of this where he's actually questioning his own motives or his own motivational tactics or his own coaching. I think he thinks, I had a game plan, we coached them up, but we can't go out there and teach them toughness. And I think he kind of sounded the alarm that you guys aren't tough enough, that they beat you. They beat you physically. They embarrassed you. And I wonder, maybe this was an alarm to the defensive line. Maybe this is an alarm. Like I said, the front seven of the Packers got absolutely massacred in this game. Maybe it's an alarm there. But is it an alarm to Aaron Rodgers, who looked totally detached emotionally from the start of that game and felt like he emotionally went into the tank after the first quarter?
Yeah, I think I would actually say it's an alarm to two people. I do think it's an alarm to Aaron Rodgers because part of the attraction of getting the Packer job, interviewing for the Packer job, and taking the Packer job is that you have what you would hope would be another 4 or 5 years of Aaron Rodgers, and that's got to be right. Like, wow, I have a real shot to win a Super Bowl. And when you see Rodgers get on the precipice and totally just seem dejected the moment the team got down, that's got to bother him, and that's probably a shot. And he probably realizes himself, LaFleur, that if I'm going to be successful as a head coach, well, damn, I better get to a Super Bowl now with Aaron Rodgers, because what is next for me when Aaron Rodgers retires? Do I get a second coaching opportunity? Do the Packers draft somebody else? Am I still here for that? So, yeah, it's a shot at that. I also wonder if it's a shot at Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator.
Think you could be right
because
on that.
All season long, when you watch the Green Bay Packers, and they go sign as a Darius Smith, and Preston Smith, and they build that defense up, how many bouquets did Mike Pettine get this season by broadcasters and by fans when discussing the Green Bay Packers? There were games you could forget that Matt LaFleur was the head coach. It was all about Mike Pettine's defense, Mike Pettine's defense, Mike Pettine's defense. And when push came to shove, that team stepped on the field in an NFC Championship game and allowed in a passing league a quarterback to throw a ball 8 times and absolutely get bullied, where they looked like they had no interest in making a tackle in the run game by a front seven that was waxed and patted on the back because of Mike Pettine all year long. And LaFleur didn't get the credit he probably deserved with this team, and Mike Pettine got all that credit. I bet you that was a hey, know your place moment at Mike Pettine from Matt LaFleur too.
So I tend to agree. I think Mike Pettine's seen as this tough-nosed, hard-nosed guy. He comes off as the defensive guy. I mean, he's a bald guy, gruff, aggressive. But then why do they retain him? Why did they bring back Mike Pettine if Matt LaFleur is sending him a, hey, get your kitchen in order?
Well, because ultimately Matt LaFleur has to understand that Mike Pettine still had a really good year for the defense. It unraveled badly in the NFC Championship game, but the reason...
And the first time around against the Niners.
Right. But the reason they are 13-3 is really not because of Matt LaFleur's offense. It's because the Packers became a defensive-first team. They got after the quarterback. They were able to confuse a lot of teams with their packages. The Packer defense was the best defense we've seen in a long time. It just unraveled versus the 49ers, and especially in the NFC Championship game. If you're going to let go of Mike Pettine after that, and you're a rookie head coach like Matt LaFleur, well, what message does that send, and what defensive coordinator are you getting right now that's going to be better suited with this system than Mike Pettine?
It's fair.
It's just a reminder to Mike Pettine that, hey, we appreciate what you do, but remember your place. You weren't good enough in this spot, and your defense let us down. You know, you want to take all the credit when the going's good. Mike Pettine did all year. He had no problem doing press conferences and everything. You better stand up and understand it was your defense and your game plan that absolutely undid us.
It's fair. I think that LaFleur saying that yesterday was calculated. Because, again, you can come out of an NFC Championship game berth against a team that might end up winning the Super Bowl and say, we had a great first year, and we're looking forward to next year, and put bouquets on it, and he didn't. And that was calculated because he was alarmed at how they got bullied, and I think he's really worried. Either it's his defensive coordinator, his defense, his quarterback. Hey, we went in the bag. And he should be.
He should be. And I hear Matt LaFleur speak yesterday, and I watch how it ended, and I just can't help but thinking there is one person in this world walking the earth who looks better today than they did 2 weeks ago because of the way it ended with the Packers, and that's Mike McCarthy. Because Mike McCarthy got crushed by anybody who wanted to doubt him and coming back and being a head coach. It was, how could you only win one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers? How could there be a rift with Aaron Rodgers? What did Mike McCarthy do wrong? And here we are after one season with Matt LaFleur, where they go to an NFC Championship game, and Mike McCarthy knew how to get to those with Aaron Rodgers, and you have Matt LaFleur taking shots, subtle shots, at staff, at the players, and at Aaron Rodgers himself, when isn't that all of what we criticize Mike McCarthy for, that he couldn't get it done in a situation like this?
And that you realize that maybe Aaron Rodgers is really difficult to coach.
Yes.
Really, really difficult. Now, McCarthy might have had his own problems and not done his part as well. Certainly there could be responsibility in his end. But it's possible Rodgers is really unmotivated right now to be his best self and that he's exploring other things. I mean, he's talking about religion with Danica, which is not a bad thing. I like thinkers, but he seems to really be exploring a lot of things personally, whether it's his family, religion, you know, climate change, all of these things. Football just might not be that important to him right now.
Right. And if it's not that important to him, he certainly doesn't want to hear what he's doing wrong,
right,
or what he could be doing better. Or maybe he'll listen to what he could be doing better, but maybe there's a way to talk to Aaron Rodgers that Mike McCarthy couldn't do it at the end, and maybe Matt LaFleur couldn't either, where Aaron Rodgers has so much going on and he kind of has taken on this, I have my beliefs, and I, you know, maybe he just believes he's smarter and knows more than everybody, that is he going to look at a young head coach like Matt LaFleur and be told, no, this is what I'm doing wrong? I'm Aaron Rodgers, you're Matt LaFleur. And is that helping the team ultimately? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of Tom Brady that's really admirable, which is every single year, no matter the success, I will approach the job the same way, that I haven't accomplished anything, that we start over, that I'm not, you know, above the fray. I know that he hasn't reported to OTAs the last couple of years or worked out with receivers, but I mean, largely, you never question his work ethic, his commitment to the cause, no matter how much he's accomplished. And the flip side of that is sometimes it feels like Tom Brady's really one-dimensional, that there really is nothing in his life worthy of his attention besides competition. Whereas Aaron Rodgers is the opposite, where it feels like he's exploring intellectually a lot of things and parts of his life and his relationship with family and authority and religion and spirituality and all of these things that's very admirable as a cause as well, but does not help you win football games on Sunday. There is a part of me that just wonders if Aaron Rodgers is like, yeah, football's fine, but I'm fine. I'm going to the Hall of Fame. I've got a title. And, you know, I'm kind of good in where I'm at football-wise. What I'm pursuing now is this kind of enlightenment or fulfillment that can't come from football. When we come back here on the show, we had an interesting moment on CBS Sports Radio last night where a host and a producer admitted how much they disliked one another. And we are stunned to a news! DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This year like last year, the best is right here on CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
22 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote at geico.com. That's easy. Brand new PGP is out, everybody. We break it down. The day Mraz crossed his own strike, his own picket line. We discuss the behind the scenes of the work, how it was delegated, and Mraz's decision making behind it. He crossed his own picket line after just one day of a strike. It's available on the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, the show about the show within the show, available on the DA Show podcast feed as well as its own podcast feed. Search Permission Granted Podcast or just look for it on its normal DA Show podcast feed as well. Let's play this audio from last night, shall we? Scott Farrell, longtime host here on CBS Sports Radio, has recently left, and so that has allowed the door to open for multiple rotating evening show hosts here on CBS Sports Radio, one of which, Andy Gresh, who you've heard of these airwaves for many, many years, and he has filled in for my show as well over the years. The producer, Mike Carver, is going to be leaving with Farrell, right? Carver is leaving with Farrell to produce his new show somewhere?
As far as I understand it,
okay,
yes.
So this is kind of where a player knows he's a free agent at the end of the season and his contract will not be picked up. And so Carver is producing last night's show with Gresh and openly admits he used to hate his guts.
No. You used to fill in on WFAN.
That's
okay?
Right.
And I worked there, of course. I was the night producer with Steve Summers, all that stuff. So you'd be filling in like during the summer, during the daytime and things like that. And I would be hearing you. And I had no idea who you were. And you would come down here and you'd sit in your New England ivory tower. Okay. And you would start taking wax at my Buffalo Bills that the only way they'll ever be in the Super Bowl is on an Xbox. You pulled that Xbox Buffalo Bill joke out so much, I would be sitting in my car at home going, this guy is such a jerk, man. I'd be texting a couple of the old producers working at FAM, like, are you working with this guy? What is his problem? And then, Gresh, I get to know you a little better. I get to the bench with Scotty. I get to know Gresh. And I'm like, Gresh is a cool dude, man. I'm going to let him go on this stuff now. And now here we go. So I've always wanted to tell you that I used to hate your guts, Gresh.
I always wanted to tell you I used to hate your guts. Now, Mraz, you're friends with Carver. Did he ever text you how much he hated Gresh?
He never did, but I have always been really friendly with Gresh.
Which is weird because on Twitter, you guys snipe at each other all of the time.
All the time, but I used to call into Gresh's show before I got into sports radio all the time. So I kind of always liked Gresh a lot. So I think Carver knew that I was always a big fan of Gresh. So no, I never got any of these I hate Gresh stuff.
The da.
Ironically, I hate Gresh more today than I did 7 years ago.
And on a side note, Gresh used to have a lot more guts to hate. He's lost like over 100 pounds. It's a little unsettling.
So I'm glad you brought this up because Andy Gresh is a big man.
Was.
He's a large human being. He formerly played offensive line at University of Rhode Island. He's a big yinzer. He's from Western PA. The guy's just a big dude, and he used to probably weigh over 3 bills, right?
Oh, he took 3 spins around the earth for sure.
And he has been on this remarkable weight loss. Remarkable. And he has lost over 100 pounds, like you said. He is now thin.
Yeah.
He's a thin, tall man.
The first day he started whatever diet he was doing, actually he was filling in for you on the DA show, and he told me, and Pete, he goes, I'm starting this weird diet today, so bear with me. My brain might hurt a little bit. I'm not eating as big a breakfast. And from that moment on, he has stuck to this diet.
So it's an amazingly cool story that he became this healthy and lost all this weight. However, Bogish, it reminds me that Mraz has declared that he will lose 100 pounds by Taylor's first birthday. Now, Taylor was born December
22nd.
December 22nd. So we're almost exactly at 11 months to go. Where are you at on your 100-pound weight loss?
So I started at 258, so I need to get to 158.
Okay.
This morning I did step on the scale, and I am at 264.
Okay. Okay.
Now, I have a weird waist.
I've actually never heard
that's not
you
the problem.
Give the specific numbers. I don't think that you should be 158 pounds. Not to let you off the hook for this, but you should have picked a better target because 158 is probably not the right weight for you anyway.
Why not just grown men that are 158?
Yeah, but not.
Yeah, how much you weigh?
About 162, 63.
Okay, so right around DA loses 5 pounds at 158. I can't look like him?
I feel like you're
built a little differently.
Yeah.
You're built a little differently.
Yeah, but you change the build. You lose the weight.
Not with that waist.
What do you mean?
You said you had a weird waist.
Yeah.
So let it melt. If I have to get bone structure surgery because I lost so much weight, so be it.
Let it melt. Let it melt. Frozen 3. Mraz's waist.
I have a
the
weird
human Olaf
waist.
Why does he have a burger on his head?
So, Mraz, you only have to lose 10 pounds a month starting today, every month, for the next 11 months.
All right, look, it's possible.
To get down to the target date.
I'm starting a boot camp the day after the Super Bowl.
So, when does it end?
Well, because I know in Miami
by
I'm not
exactly
dying.
By the XFL championship.
Not my XFL debut.
No. I'm going to do a boot camp. And I am going on, by the way, strict no alcohol from Super Bowl Monday to St. Paddy's Day.
Okay, so you're going to do about 6 weeks, no booze.
No booze at all. I'm giving up anything French fried related for Lent.
The family, the French fry family. I'm
well, that includes your home fries and stuff like that for breakfast.
So potatoes is what you're giving
well,
up.
Well, no, because if I sneak a mashed in there, I'm not going to, you know, arrest myself. And I think outside of cookies, I want to give up desserts for at least 2 months.
Outside of cookies.
Look. I'm gonna.
This is worse than my idea of a
no,
diet.
It's not, because your blood sugar gets potato low.
Having a gallon of mashed potato with bacon and cheese on top, you might as well have a French fry
and 7 cookies
right
after.
If I didn't have cake,
No, look, I'm going to avoid the brownies. I'm going to avoid the ice. I'm big on ice cream. I'm going to avoid cannolis. I'm going to avoid cheesecakes. But look, sometimes your blood sugar gets low. You're going to have to hit your brain with something. So I figure cookies an easy nosh.
Mraz. Come on. July 4th weekend. Mr. Softy comes around your neighborhood.
I said 2 months. I know that.
Oh, okay. So got it. So that you're only going until March
17th. That's the boot camp part of the program.
And then when does the diet kick in?
Well, that's part of the diet. And then my hope is from that point forward, I see progress.
Uh-huh.
And there I am making conscientious efforts. And then if I choose to have a Mr. Softy on July 4th, maybe I only have it on July 4th and I don't have it on July 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Okay. Well, I hope, obviously I'm rooting for you. But you've got to lose 106 in the next 11 months.
At some point,
see, by the way,
when you bet against me, I prevail.
That's the analytics of the day. Right. You've got to lose 106 pounds in 11 months, right? Starting today.
Look, Rome wasn't built in a day, guys. I'm gonna ride out the next 10 days. I'm going to go to Miami. I'm gonna show my bod one last time, and then when I arrive at the beach a year later. I got news for you. People are going to look at my moves, and they're not going to be there.
Good one.
At what point do we pick what actual weight he will finish at that first birthday party?
Look, I think that this is very important. I think either we do this on the day boot camp begins or on the day boot camp ends. Maybe we wait to see how boot camp goes on March 17th, St. Patty's Day, and declare right there, okay, here's what target weight really is.
That's fair.
Set an over-under.
Right.
So on St. Patty's Day, we'll then have some type of body of work, we'll say.
I agree, although it should be noted as I'm saying this, I do realize I have Nets tickets on Sunday, March 8th, so I'm going to have to just jump in on the alcohol part of that again that day. But then I'll jump back off for a week. Right.
Okay,
cookies
so really,
only.
Boot camp ends really March 8th.
But on March 9th, I'm back.
Okay, is that how boot camp works?
March 8th will be my cheat day.
Boot camp works where you enlist in the military, and then for one day you leave, go crazy.
I'm going to take a break, Uncle Sam.
And then you come back to boot camp.
Where are my cookies, by the way? I'm only on a mashed potato diet. Thank you. You can take your curly fries back.
Any potato expert will tell you they're healthier than a French fry in oil. There's no oil.
If there's a potato expert listening,
let me tell you something.
855-212-4CBS.
Well, we're on
in
Boise.
You think they didn't laugh at Atkins the first time he came across with his diet or Mr. Keto or whoever else came across? You can't just eat sausage all day and lose weight. And now guess what? The first guy to come up with intermittent fasting, you think they didn't look at him and go, what are you, nuts? You got to eat.
What do you think the first name of Mr. Atkins was?
I know it's not Gino because he plays for the Bengals. I'm going to say Charles.
Okay. So the great Charles Atkins.
Right.
Okay. And
you think when he was rolling out with the low carbs?
And what do you think Mr. Keto's name was?
Kenny.
No, I probably a
Kenny
Phil.
Keto.
A Phil. Phil Keto.
Do you know their names? Because you're laughing at me. I don't see how you guys know their names.
There is a Dr. Atkins. I don't know about
Keto. Yes, he wrote a book on low carbs.
Keto is not the name of a last name. It's ketosis. It's the type of processing your body does.
Oh. Well, then who invented it?
Well, I just like the idea of Phil Keto,
former
nose tackle of the Texans.
He's running this boot camp.
You're losing.
You mashed potatoes and cookies.
You're
Sergeant Phil Keto.
No, but you're losing. Listen to me. You're losing sight of the point. You're making jokes. All of those men or women who came across with these diets before were all laughed at and walked all over. Now, I'm telling you, I'm giving up french fries for mashed potatoes.
But that's not a
giving
diet.
Up cakes for cookies.
That's not a diet.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So every day you will swap mashed potatoes in for...
I didn't say every day. I said when I'm thinking about
a friend.
Diet
is what you do every day.
What I
for
do...
For every meal.
So it's going to be protein, a lot of grilled chicken, a lot of egg whites.
Okay.
And it's going to be wraps instead of bread. Mm-hmm. Wheat, hopefully.
Okay.
Then it'll be, like I said, if I need to nibble on something dessert related, it will be... A cookie, and maybe I'll go oatmeal raisin since that's a little healthier with oatmeals and raisins. And then I'll mix in some nuts. There'll be fruit during the day.
My own cheese.
I'll have a banana. And cheese. Maybe I'll lay back a cheese, maybe one polio stick a day or something.
Can I just point that out again? When did you make this proclamation of losing 100 pounds in the first year?
Months ago.
Okay, so months ago, You have only gained weight since then.
Do you know what a pregnancy does to a man?
You're telling me and Damon how you've come up with a diet to make you lose more weight than you were originally set out to lose.
Pretzel bun? Again, do you understand what a diet, what a pregnancy does to a man?
Yeah, I've been through two
of them. Yeah, rumpus. Yeah. It's uncomfortable. The wife's starving. I'm going to look at her having half a fried chicken. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to eat a cantaloupe. What are you, nuts?
Let's also go back to where he called string cheese polio. String cheese.
The one where you pull it with the bird chirping in the old commercials in the 90s.
That's the worst type of string cheese. The one that gives you polio.
Polio's a disease, but it's spelt like polio.
It's right next to the bobolio.
Polio.
A polio. Oh, sue me for the pronunciation.
Yeah, you know that dairy snack that gives you rickets?
Real supportive. I come up with a great diet plan and you want to do whatever you want. When I write my book about my diet and I'm cashing in, you know what? And I'm going on the Zach Gelb show at night because you guys won't book me. I don't want to hear it.
Forward by Dr. Phil Keto.
It's a comedy book.
Bobby a old scurvy orange per day keeps the doctor away.
Polio shrimp cheese.
You'll lose weight that way.
I lost 100 pounds by her first birthday. I was gone by her second. Polio shrimp cheese.
I got your diet right here. Deathly illness. You'll need a vaccine for it. It's a great diet. It kills half the population, but you know what? You lose weight that first 12 months.
And you can have cookies, so everybody wins.
Mashed potatoes and the polio virus. You'll lose weight.
I'm not going to give in to this. Boot camp starting yeah. February the 3rd. Aioli? Believe.
Andrew Bogish is in with your headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
These headlines are sponsored by NFL Network, your home for the most playoff coverage anywhere, all the way through Super Bowl 54. NFL Network, one network all postseason long. Two Super Bowl titles and two Super Bowl MVPs, 244 interceptions, and a perfectly .500 record. Eli Manning retiring after 16 seasons, all as a Giant. He holds almost every major passing record in team history. If Manning wanted to continue playing, it would have had to be somewhere else, since future Hall of Famer Daniel Jones had overwhelmed him here in New York. Dan Snyder reportedly met with Maryland lawmakers yesterday to discuss a gambling license for the proposed location for a new stadium. Maryland deciding how to handle sports betting as a whole right now. To his credit, and I do this begrudgingly, DA, Snyder actually would finance this new building all by himself. The only thing he's asking for, apparently, from the government is the ability to have some kind of betting house slash casino on the site. Because no team deserves public money anymore for a new building, but he deserves it as little as anybody.
That's exactly right.
And I guess he's willing to pay for this by himself.
Well, I like that we finally got to a point where owners are paying 100% of the cost of their stadiums. I mean, we're seeing that in L.A. Mm-hmm. with Stan Kroenke. We saw that in New England with the Kraft family. I'd prefer that's the way all these buildings were built, although the casino part of it just feels like another rich guy pulling the lever and getting more rich with free land.
That's true. Maybe there's a little sneakiness involved here. All of this doesn't matter just yet because his lease at FedEx Field runs through 2027. Zion Williamson had 5 points through his first three quarters last night, then scored 17 in the fourth. He even heard MVP chants.
Not gonna lie, that was different. I don't think I've ever gotten to that magnitude.
The big fourth quarter got the Pelicans as close as one, but they lost to the Spurs 121-117. Zion finished with 22 points, including 4 threes, 7 rebounds in 18 minutes. He finished the game on the bench, having reached his playing time limit. The Jazz steamrolled the Warriors 129-96. The Rockets snapped their 4-game slot 121-105 over the Nuggets, Toronto 107, Philly 95, the Lakers a 192 victory at the Knicks, and another Celtic blowout.
Celtics by 30 for the second straight game. 84-54, Hayward steps to his left, quick three, got it.
When it rains, it pours, and it is thundering down on the Grizzlies right now.
Save some of that, boys.
Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell, Celtics Radio. Boston thumped Memphis 119-95 after a 32-point TKO of the Lakers. Jason Tatum scored 23 in that one, but left in the third with a groin injury. The Big 12 handing out punishment for that Kansas K-State brawl, as expected. Jayhawk Silvio D'Souza gets the worst of it. 12 games, which takes him through the rest of the regular season. The Mets are expected to hire Luis Rojas to replace Carlos Beltran. He's been with the organization for 13 seasons, most recently as the quality control coach.
I can't stop laughing. Pilates playing sound effects over as eating as he crushes a Mrs. Field cookie right now.
Oh, but it's a cookie though, right?
He says he wants to clear out the inventory before boot camp.
No, the boss just sent me this when I had the baby. I need to eat the rest of them.
Get even farther away from your goal before boot camp starts.
What are you going to do, throw them out? People are starving all over this world.
All right, just give them to them.
I just like that we're no more than 45 seconds. You couldn't even get through Bogus's entire headlines before you started eating after claiming you had the diet that would revolutionize health.
Boot camp didn't start yet. I told you cookies were okay, and I'm stressed out. It calms me down. French onion dip with bacon. Let these rot until next year. They're sitting in my cabinet. I'm going to eat them.
Stress eating over his diet.
Oh my God, I've laughed a lot on this show in 7 years, but my sides actually hurt. What are you stressed out about?
You guys think I can't do it.
You can't.
So you're stressed out about us thinking you can't stop eating, so you're going to keep eating.
It just calms me. It puts me in a good place mentally.
We don't think you can't. We know you can't.
All right. Okay. Without
burst with cheese,
further ado, give it to me, Pete.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
And when we're stunned, we eat. I've known this napping for a while, but it is still stunning. It was 40 degrees in Miami yesterday morning. Wind chills in the lower 30s.
Yeah.
As cold as it's been there in, I think, 9 years.
Imagine it was colder for this Super Bowl than the one in New York.
Now, those temperatures led to an interesting warning from the National Weather Service. An iguana falling warning. Iguanas are cold-blooded.
Florida is so weird.
Yes.
It is the most weird place on Earth.
These reptiles, they're cold-blooded. So when it gets too cold, their body slows down to the point where they basically pass out, and they are frozen for all intents and purposes, and they fall out of trees, creating a danger as they fall. So you need to look up, I guess, as you're walking through cold Miami yesterday.
It's remarkable. Okay, so you might say, well, how did iguanas survive this long in Miami? They're not natural.
Correct.
They were introduced to the environment from pet collectors.
Right.
And then they just spawned a million of them because it's so hot all the time.
Which is my next point.
They are a pest in Florida.
They are. It's called technically called an invasive species.
Yeah.
And except for like abusing them, you are allowed and, in fact, encouraged in Florida to kill them.
That's right. You're allowed to hunt these things.
So it has become easier with them falling from trees that in the last, like, 72 hours, there's been an uptick in online iguana meat sale because you can just basically walk down the street and grab it and sell it.
By the way, iguanas in Florida become huge.
Mm.
They're enormous lizards. So when they fall out of trees, it's like a toaster falling on you. It's huge. It's heavy. These things are ridiculous. Florida is the most weird place.
Yeah.
I mean, it might as well be Madagascar. There are so many different weird species of everything, humans and animals and plants, that are just kind of spun together in this petri dish of society. And I've spent time, had two tours of duty down there in radio. I mean, we're going down there next week.
Right.
It is.
Better warm up.
It's the only place on Earth where lizards fall out of trees.
Yep.
On top of you.
There's an official governmental warning for it. Because it happens often enough. But now the new follow-up question is, how do iguanas fit into the Marash boot camp diet?
Mm.
Well, I think if they're frozen, I could probably lift both of them like they're dumbbells.
would you eat iguana meat? How, is that healthier?
If it was fresh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fresh. So no, saute it?
No frozen iguana meat for you. No.
Well, then preservatives come in.
No processed iguana meat.
No. If it was healthy like fish, yeah, I'd eat it.
Okay.
So there you go. Hard hats. Watch where you're stepping in Florida.
It is amazing. I went out on a buddy's boat 2 years ago, and we rode along the docks of the canal in Fort Lauderdale, and every dock had what appeared to be like a 15-pound iguana splayed out on the dock. And everyone's like, oh, God, get those away. I'm like, they're everywhere. I mean, they're basically taking over Florida as their vacation land.
Yeah. They're old New Yorkers.
Yeah. Mm. And they're just falling out of trees. It's like Del Boca Vista.
And they're not dead. They do eventually come back. Mostly they wake up eventually when it warms up.
Amazing.
But it gets too cold and down they go.
They thaw out and then come to life again.
Yeah. Like nothing happened.
Nate is next up in Boise, Idaho on 93.1 The Ticket. Good morning, Nate. You have a thought on mashed potatoes for us?
Yeah, I know we just did Stunned to a News, but, you know, in most nice restaurants, when mashed potatoes are made, you know, it's butter and heavy whipping cream, which is, you know, heavy whipping cream, 200 calories per tablespoon. So I don't know where the mashed potato diet's going to fit in with Meraz, but
not a great alternative.
No, I use almond milk, not heavy whipping cream.
Okay.
Still 7 pounds of butter, but almond milk.
When we come back, are the Dolphins circling to move up in the draft for Joe Burrow? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Don't like something? Get it out.
You're out of breath? You want to go to Canton and you're winded? You're winded? That's your job. You're paid not to be winded. You're winded? You're out.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The DA Show each and every morning, 6 until 10 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on CBS Sports Radio. Mornings are hard. Your sports radio morning show shouldn't be. We laugh a lot. We talk a lot about food. We talk a lot about sports. We think you'll enjoy the show. You can always catch it on your phone as well. Stream us using the CBS Sports app, the Radio.com app, or Apple Music.
Woo!
Dan Tweeds, DA, last segment. I think we have a 12 DAs winner.
I got a candidate for the 12 DAs, okay?
Robin, the 3-2-1. This is a top three 12 DA of Christmas. If not, it is a crime. Meraz was about to strike it. Would about to strike. It would be after you guys if he were to strike. After ripping him to shredded chicken about his weight loss goals. Definite top three. Paul tweets, I like Meraz's diet plan. If he gets polio, he easily loses 100 pounds. Hashtag Phil Keto.
I got a candidate for the 12 DAs, okay?
Brian tweets, can Meraz send me an advanced copy of his diet plan? I'm looking to gain 25 pounds in the next 11 months. Also, definite candidate for the 12 DAs of Christmas.
I got a candidate for the 12 DAs, okay?
Kara tweets, I'm laughing so hard about the diet plan, I am crying. I had to pull over on my way to work and hope my makeup isn't too messed up right now. Hashtag Key Lardo, hashtag polio cheese.
I got a candidate for the 12 DAs, okay?
Nick tweets, this diet is to die for. Hashtag polio cheese sticks. Hashtag Mr. Keto.
I got a candidate for the 12 DAs, okay?
Key Lardo, Key Lomo. Ooh, my pretty mama to Bahama, my mama. I'll drop dead!
Could the Dolphins move up to grab Joe Burrow number one? Sounds like their owner, Stephen Ross, is encouraging his front office to do exactly that. Now, the Dolphins, by virtue of trading away everybody on their roster last year, have three number one picks this year. If the Bengals were to trade out a number one, and this is why I think the Bengals backed off the idea that they would not trade number one, it's because if you are given three firsts this year, I think you do the deal. Now, I think that's kind of crazy. Would anybody trade three first-round picks to move up to number one? I mean, maybe. Maybe, because I guess you only lose the two other firsts this year. But if the Bengals were to get that bounty from the Dolphins, they'd absolutely listen to it. And you might be crazy not to pull the trigger on that, especially if the Dolphins threw in something else. I think Stephen Ross should stay out of it, though. Let football people make football decisions. As an owner, don't get involved.
because then you throw everything off track and create warring factions as well. Personally, I don't think I'd trade three number ones of the same draft for Joe Burrow. When we come back, Don Beebe's going to join us, former Super Bowl champion with the Packers, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.